Good evening. Hello, everybody. The first order of business is a public hearing on the proposed amendments to the Tompkins County Comprehensive Plan. Is there anybody who would like to speak to the comp plan, the five-year review? All right, well, I'll close the public hearing and call the October 15, 2019 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members, please.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Present.
Rich John.
Here.
Anna Kellis.
Here.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne.
I am present.
Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
14 members present.
Thank you. I will not be asking for an executive session tonight. But I will be trying to move some things around a little bit for the benefit of staff. Do we have any public? Don't see any public comments. All right, we're sailing through here. Any legislators? Are there any municipal officials? Anybody in the corner? What is it? The weather's too nice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so hurry this along.
Legislators, anybody have anything to share? Dan Klein.
Thank you. Brookendale Apple Festival is this coming Saturday, October 19th from 10 to 3. There's a 5K run. There's live music. There's lots of apple pies and other products. There's wagon rides. So looking for something seasonal to do this Saturday. Brookendale Community Center, 10 to 3. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. Amanda Champion.
Thank you. I have two things. One is that on this Thursday at the library is the EMC, the Environmental Management Council's event, which is called Development with the Earth in Mind, the Compelling Need for Sustainable Community Development and Environmental Protection. And that starts at 5:30 in the Borg Warner Room and includes quite a lot of great speakers and presenters. So hopefully people can come to that. The other interesting thing is that last week I received 8 letters in the mail from constituents. My district includes Ithaca College campus, and I generally don't really ever hear from students. So I was quite delighted that I got 8 letters from 8 students who all are volunteering this year with Habitat for Humanity, and I thought that I would just read one of them because they were all very well informed, very thoughtful, and clearly our students are getting involved in our community. So this one is from a fellow named Gerald, who is a sophomore and working with Habitat for Humanity. We are doing work to make sure that the underprivileged and the poor can have housing in our community and beyond. In this letter to you today, I'd like to focus on Ithaca and surrounding Tompkins County community. I think it is quite clear to you and me both that the situation in Ithaca is one that needs to be resolved. There are housing issues locally and nationally that should be brought forth to the appropriate people. One such issue I am passionate about is the transitioning from prison to the outside. It is quite difficult as a convicted felon, to find a job, and on top of that, finding a home. It is a cruel domino effect cycle that will keep the ex-con in poverty until their life ends. I hope that you and other representatives in the area can devise plans to make it easier for these people to return to society. Being privileged, it's our job to pull these people from the margins. They have served their time This injustice simply is not fair. I am also quite passionate about making sure that even those who use drugs and have limitations stacked against them, like bad credit, etc., can have the opportunity to find housing. I feel like it is unfair that limitations controlled by the society and government will put someone in the position to freeze once November comes. In Ithaca, everyone should have a roof over their heads. It's very cold here. November through April could prove to be a war for the homeless population. Also, as the climate goes through changes, the battles might begin in mid-October. I hope you consider my thoughts. And they were all like this, like very thoughtful, and clearly these students are paying attention to what's going on and learning. So it's just sharing that with you. I'm going to obviously write them back, and hopefully we're all working on these things, but we know that people care, and we got to keep doing more. So thank you.
Thanks, Amanda. Appreciate that. Annie Corman.
Thank you. Tomorrow at the Trumansburg Farmers Market is a Halloween spectacular event. So if you want a seasonal scary thing to go to, it's 4 to 7 at the Trumansburg Farmers Market. And they are going to have ghouls, ghosts, and goblins alike. And it says to come on down for a spooky market event. Come in costume and paint a pumpkin. Grab a glass of hot cider or take a photo in front of our Halloween photo booth. Parents are encouraged to bring children. It will not be too scary. That's 4 to 7 tomorrow.
Appropriately scary.
Anybody else? Mike Lane.
What a beautiful Columbus Day, Indigenous Peoples Day weekend we had in Tompkins County with the sun and so many activities going on. One I wanted to highlight was the volunteer firemen, Neptune Hose Company in Dryden had an open house and had many fire departments bring in their equipment. They also that same day had taken delivery of their new tower ladder truck for Neptune Hose Company, which I was told was cost over $1 million. And I just want to point out that the most calls for service, assistance of service that they receive for the ladder truck goes to the city of Ithaca. So there's taxpayer dollars, for example, in other communities that are helping Ithaca out. When folks think that that we don't provide assistance down that way. So I just want to point that out and say it was a great time. The leaves are turning just spectacularly this year. And thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Anna Kellis.
I just wanted to note that tonight is a debate the Democratic Party presidential debate, and there is the Tompkins County Democratic Committee is sponsoring a debate watch party for all of those of us who will urge getting out by 7:30 tonight. We can join them. That is at Casita del Polaris, which is at 1201 North Tioga Street. That's in Fall Creek. So yeah, we'll see some of you there this evening.
Thank you, Anna. Anybody else? All right. I think we're ready for Katie. Katie Borghella, Commissioner of Planning and Sustainability. We are not going to be having a presentation on the Community Housing Development Fund. We'll do that next legislature meeting, November 7th, when we'll have a couple of resolutions on the agenda, and Megan McDonald will present about the fund then. So welcome Joan Jerkowitz, too. Hello. And do drop the screens.
Katie.
Great, so thank you for having us here.
Can you pull a microphone closer to you?
So Joan Jerkwich has been spending the past year looking at our current county comprehensive plan and looking at what kind of recommendations we would be bringing to you to potentially modify the plan. I'm here to give just a quick background on how we got here, and Joan's going to then take it into what has been done over the past year. Just a history of the plan. The county adopted its first county comprehensive plan in 2004. This was amended with a substantial chapter on energy and greenhouse gas emissions in 2008, and then again had a full rewrite in 2015. And that is this version that I think you all have, and if you don't, we have extra copies if you would like another one. It's the standing comprehensive plan right now. Every 5 years, we take a close look at the comprehensive plan to make sure it's still relevant to the community, and that's what we're reporting on today. Just briefly, there are 9 total principles in the comprehensive plan, 9 topical, and 3 overarching principles. The overarching principles have to do with sustainability, fiscal responsibility, and cooperation amongst government. The interlocking principles, you can see up there, everything from the economy to transportation to housing. Underneath the different chapters are a total of 52 policies, and these really are meant to be kind of guideposts for us in the county government when we consider future proposals and actions. They're meant to be considered as a whole, not one just plucked out randomly, but the whole interlocking idea is really quite important in the comprehensive plan. And then identified within the chapters are 28 action items. And these are actions that the county government could take, not assigning tasks to non-county government entities, because we tried that in the first version of the comprehensive plan, and it doesn't work that well. So we also tried to make them specific enough to know when they were complete. So, like I said, the 2015 comp plan, in the comprehensive plan, it states that it should be a dynamic document. It's meant to be kind of really reviewed in a thorough manner every 5 years with a full update every 10 years. And so what we're trying to get at here with this review is have conditions in the community changed to such an extent that it warrants a formal amendment to the plan. And to try to get at that question, we asked 5 questions. So first of all, which action items have been completed that we can remove from the plan? Is it based on accurate data? Data changes, and is it a significant enough change to the data that the 2015 plan is based on to warrant changes to the plan right now? Are the plan's principles and policies still relevant? Are there other important issues that have arisen in the past 5 years that aren't included or addressed by the principles and policies? And finally, the list of action items, modifying those. If enough of them have been removed from the plan in step one, a new list of action items that really it forms the basis in many ways of our departmental work program moving forward to make sure that we keep an eye on what these action items are and move them forward. And so with that introduction, I'm going to have Joan dive into each one of these questions and give you the answers to the questions on what we have learned during the course of the year.
Thanks, Katie. So the first two questions are largely technical in nature, and so they were basically performed at the staff level. So the question about the action items that were in the 2015 plan, we assessed to see the status of those and most are completed or well underway, and so we really do need to look at establishing new action items to move forward with implementing the comprehensive plan. We also looked at the data that's reported in the plan to see what's changed. And while there were some changes in data, as you can imagine, things do change at least partially over the years. Our bottom line conclusion was that nothing has changed significantly enough to sort of warrant doing a deep dive on any particular chapter or area of the plan to sort of reassess what the issues are and what the policies that might need to be changed. I will mention that particularly demographic data that's put out by the Census Bureau annually does change, and we did see a couple of little trends, but they were within the margin of error of the data, but we're going to keep an eye on those in the future, particularly those related to housing costs in our community. So that was the first two questions, largely technical, the staff led. The final three questions, we wanted to involve the community more in addressing those questions rather than just relying on staff, although staff played a key role in a lot of those as well. So the third question were whether the principles and policies were still relevant to the community. Kind of, did we say anything in the plan before that we wish we hadn't or that we don't think we should be saying now? We did receive some public comments on suggested wording changes. No one suggested that anything was out of date and needed to be removed, and that was kind of our standard for going back and amending. We didn't want to just start tweaking words here and there that did not really, significantly impact the remainder of the plan. The fourth question was whether any new issues had arisen in the last 5 years that are not addressed by the plan's principles and policies. People identified a number of issues that they did not think were adequately addressed in the comprehensive plan. And the appendix to the 5-year review report, which is included in your agenda package, has a list of everything that people suggested. So if you want to take a look at that, do that deep dive, that's available to you. There were several items that I think you can imagine that we are saying they were addressed by the principles and policies in the plan, but we did see a need to add action items to address them in a way that we wouldn't have anticipated 5 years ago. And those were addressing the issues of drought, harmful algal blooms, the natural gas moratorium, and the most recent report on energy and greenhouse gas emissions. I'll be touching back on that when we talk about the action items. Which is the next question. Since we've largely accomplished what was in the comprehensive plan, the 28 action items there, we are recommending adding new action items to move the plan forward. I'll give you a little background. We did review in preparing that list. We looked at all the plans and strategies that have been adopted since 2015, including the tourism strategy, the housing strategy, the recently adopted energy strategy, as well as going back over older reports, looking through the list of items that were considered back in 2015 but did not make the cut because we didn't have unlimited resources. So in all, we ended up identifying about 600 potential action items. That is not in your report, but we have it if you really want to see the list of 600. And in addition, the public identified some action items as well as some of the groups we met with to move forward with the plan. And again, all of that's not the 600, but the others that were identified by people are included in the appendix to the report. And so in brief, we're recommending that the comprehensive plan be formally amended to include 18 new action items. And I'm going to go over these briefly now. I'm not going to talk about all 18, but when we get to the end and there's time for question and answers, I'm happy to talk about any of them. I think one of the most significant additions is the first recommended action item would have the county provide more assistance to municipalities when they undertake projects that move forward the vision of the comprehensive plan. So not an open-ended we'll do anything, but anything that's moving forward, what we've identified in the comprehensive plan would be important.
Add that there's no priority to this list. It's just they're kind of topically put together.
Thank you. Forgot to say that. I want to, as mentioned a little bit a couple of minutes ago, one of the new issues facing the county is the proliferation of algal blooms, and so we've added an action item to develop a strategy for Tompkins County to address harmful algal blooms, something that's specific to our county and not broad brush state level. Additional action items are also included to address water quality, not just the HABs issue. One is including best practices for watershed rules and regulations to protect drinking water quality, which is focused on the potential of establishing such rules for the Cayuga Lake watershed. That would be an interdepartmental effort with the health department and would probably involve, not probably, it would involve coordinating with adjoining counties as well if we're going to do a watershed-wide approach to watershed regulations. Next, the recommended development of the county resiliency and recovery plan would in part address the drought issue. That's definitely an issue that will be included in that plan update. And so we'll be taking sort of first steps for being prepared for potential droughts in the future. And there are several action items recommended concerning greenhouse gas emissions. For example, the action item for the county to determine a financially sound path to net zero emissions. That would be another interdepartmental action involving county administration, facilities, planning and sustainability, as well as other departments as we address specific issues. And then the one I want to mention is, as I believe you've already seen during the budget review process in 2020, one of the recommended actions is to support TCAD's update of the intermunicipal water and sewer feasibility study for the county. So that's also included as a proposed action item to move forward our comprehensive plan. And it's a very light touch on things. I wanted to leave as much time for questions as you may need. As I mentioned, included in your report is our report on the results of our review. If you don't really want to read the whole thing, the first four pages pretty much act as an executive summary. And we'll be back again in, I think, next meeting to ask you to take that formal step of amending the comprehensive plan. So I'll stop talking.
All right. Thank you, Joan. And that the draft resolution, potential draft resolution, is packet page 9. Did that go through PEAK yet? Did that already went through PEAK? Okay. All right. Questions, comments, conversation? Leslin.
So on your list was the strategic tourism planning strategic plan. Could you all say more about why that was identified as an action step? I mean, they just did that last year, their strategic plan. What made it stand out as something that needs to be tweaked or looked at further?
I think you may be confusing the strategic plan with the visitor profile study.
I'm looking at the action steps. Maybe I read it wrong. You know, these glasses aren't working well today, so...
I think what you're seeing there is the completion of that update. I don't think it was completed. I know it wasn't completed last year.
So to complete that.
Is to complete that strategy update, yes.
Okay.
It's just beginning.
No, there's a draft version right now available, and STPB will be reviewing the draft this week, actually.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. Yeah. And I apologize. I think some of our 2020 labeling dates in plans make it a little confusing sometimes.
Okay.
We're working on that.
This is packet page 21 at the bottom. It says, update the Tompkins County 2020 Strategic Tourism Plan, in parentheses, 2012, which means it was finished in 2012 and adopted in 2012?
Yes.
Yes.
Meant for 2020.
Up to 2020, yes.
Okay.
So it's going to expire next year.
Wasn't it?
It did not look past 2020.
Yeah, I'm still looking a little perplexed. I got your update because, never mind.
Seems like they did talk about it last fall, but I'm not sure.
And yeah, there's a lot of input in it last fall, and actually before the fall, because we talked extensively about the diversity and inclusion portion of it, and I thought it was done. But it's fine. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. I know last year there was a lot of outreach with the survey to people in the community, as well as reaching out to visitors to the community. So a lot of the work was done last year, but it has not been completed yet.
Thank you.
Did I see other hands? Mike Lane.
Can you remind me how our comprehensive plan addresses the issue of the sediment load in Cuga Lake? And are we talking about county action at some point to try to minimize that?
For several years now, the state has been promising us a what's called a TMDL, a total maximum daily load plan for Cuga Lake. That got hung up when higher priorities come along, and it keeps getting the actual execution date keeps getting put off. But when that comes out, that will be providing some guidance or some regulatory guidance as well at the state level for further limiting sedimentation from our streams from reaching the lake. I think, however, from what I've seen or what I've heard in discussions is many of the actions that you see, for instance, in the HABS strategy or that are proposed in the HABS strategy at the state level would also address sedimentation because those two issues are very closely intertwined. So you're going to see, I think you're going to end up seeing a lot of recommendations from HABS strategy be the same kind of recommendations we're going to see in that TMDL plan as well.
So let's say, particularly in my mind, is the inlet and the terrible amount of sediment that comes into the south end of the lake from that. In my view, we're in bad need of some kind of a settling area or to intercept that. Do we have to wait for this plan in order to be thinking about things like that?
No, we don't have to wait for it. I think I've worked a little bit with the Committee of the Water Resources Council that's been discussing these issues for several years.
A long time.
A long time, yes. The sort of accepted, I don't want to say accepted, that sounds terrible, interpretation is a lot of that sediment is legacy sediment, and it's not something that's new. It's something that's been around. It's just, and it really needs to be addressed in the upper watershed level rather than when the sediment gets to the lake and then doing something, is trying to do work upstream that keeps that sediment from ever getting into the system.
That's my point.
Yes. And I think some of the programs the county's been funding are for several years now are improving conditions a bit. The stream corridor funding that we provide, some of the upland land protection funding that we've been providing to other agencies to protect lands, have really made an improvement, as well as I know the Soil and Water Conservation District works closely with farmers to address sedimentation from agricultural lands as well. So I think there's a lot going on. I don't think the problem is solved, but it's a lot of work going into it.
Just one more follow-up is, are we able to see are we seeing a decline in the amount of sediment coming down every spring?
I honestly can't answer that off the top of my head. We do, the county I know contributes funding to the Community Science Institute, who tracks all that data, collects that data. I would have to go visit their website to see what the actual trends have been over the years. Sorry, I can't do it off the top of my head, but I will get you an answer.
Thank you.
Shoot you an answer for that.
Ann Corman, then Deborah.
Thank you for the presentation, and thanks for not reading through the list of 600 suggested.
I was tempted, but, you know.
So my question is, on our packet page 31, under water resources, the third item says to conduct regular inspections of septic systems around the lake, and then it for that action item is not included at this time. And I know you had, as one of the newer action items, about developing a plan for HABs, and maybe it's too soon, but I just am wondering if that's something that could be included.
I know it's included in the state level plans. And so the HAB strategy that's being developed locally is taking the state-level ones and identifying the specific actions that we need to take locally. I also know this is something the health department has looked into on several occasions. And despite stories you might hear, they haven't found a systematic problem with septic systems along the lake, sort of a system-wide problem. But that may be changing. And I think the HABs strategy would take a look, closer look at that again.
Right, because I think it could be something that pays for itself, you know, with the price of inspections, too, and whether it's around the lake or the streams. And I know being on the Ag and Farmland Committee, I think any new regulations or enforcement or testing for farms, it would go over a lot better if something was done first or in conjunction with residential or business septic systems around the lake or streams. And
yep,
that's from hearing from people directly.
We could definitely talk to the health department about this again and see if their thinking might have changed in the past few months and get a response to you.
Okay, thank you.
This list that you're reading from, Annie, packet pages 30 to 33, this is the compilation of suggestions from the public, right? So
yes.
With right. Your on the left, and your response is about whether, how and whether to include those on the right. So,
right.
Okay. Deborah, Henry, and then Anna.
Well, a couple of things. In response to Mike's question, my understanding is that the city has a plan for a fairly substantial dredging and silt and sediment treatment facility on the Southwest Park property, north of that piece of property that was under consideration for publication. That's one thing that's going on. With respect to the septic systems that Annie brought up, Anna and I last year went to visit the woman in the Cayuga County Health Department who runs their very extensive septic system remediation program. She gave us a list of the things we shouldn't do if we design our own program. Theirs apparently is quite unwieldy to administer. And Anna and I met with the health department last year after that, and they opined that there wasn't really that much of a problem with septic systems here in Tompkins County, with the possible exception of the houses along the lake that are vacation homes that have been in families for years that are not continuously occupied, and so their septic systems are not kept up. I don't know, Katie, you may want to reference that information when you talk to Frank. And then the other thing I wanted to say originally was thank you, Joan, for spending this last irretrievable year of your life on these action items. We really appreciate all your work.
I'd rather not think of it that way, if you don't mind.
A year well spent. Thank you.
That's better. Thank you.
Henry.
Wasn't there last year an issue about flooding in the county, and with climate change there being more flooding? Is that covered?
Indirectly, that's part of the update of the resiliency and recovery plan. That includes an update of the hazard mitigation plan, which addresses flooding pretty extensively. And I know flooding is one of the major issues that plan will be addressing. It's the hazard we are most likely to suffer from in this community, at least historically. But as we've learned a little bit, drought needs to be considered now, and we always need to be prepared for those big snow and ice storms.
Also, I was wondering, this is just off the top of my head, is the food policy considerations also with part of the plan? Because we just funded.
Through CCP.
That's a separate initiative.
Okay.
I will say, too, that our Stream Corridor Protection Action Item, as well as the looking at watershed rules and regulations, would both also potentially impact flooding, and already the Natural Infrastructure Program, that's a big focus of that program, is protecting uplands to reduce flooding downstream.
Just to add to that, Henry, that's a really good point. That was CCE, but Monica did say that the Food Policy Council is really interested in getting getting government at all levels involved this time, where the Food Policy Council hasn't previously. So I'm sure, but it may be as like a setting up meetings and checking in with you guys rather than an initiative from. And the other thing I wanted to add, Deborah, you hit most of the things that I was thinking as well. I wanted to add, last year the state gave grants specifically for septic units as well, and the health department sent letters to focusing on people on the waterfront. It was funding up to 50% with a maximum of $10,000, I think.
Yeah.
And they did get some, but that work is in progress, and I think that is an annual renewing grant if we use it, and it was $150,000 that we got at the time. So there's some work done, and I just got word, what I recalled with the facility in the city, it is funding from NYSDEC for the dewatering facility as part of the dredging. It's $2 million, and $13 million for the inlet, for what it's worth. So there's just little bits of information.
NYSDEC?
Oh, near D.C., sorry.
Oh, okay.
But I did have just one question. I know, Katie, I gave you like 5-page notes. So I'm not going to hit all of those.
Just about 10 minutes ago. So,
so I won't. I'll give you a chance to read them. But one of the questions that I did have, the action step better. It was specific to the inventory on pipeline stream crossings that was done in 2016, and I was curious if there is part of the work plan to update that regularly, specifically in with respect to some of the proposals that NYSEG has made recently. So I was curious if that was like an ongoing, or that's a once every 10 years, or
the only thing I know about that is it's going to be, again, incorporated in the hazard mitigation plan, because they were looked at in terms of the impacts if those pipelines failed for whatever reason, what the impacts might be, and to be prepared for those impacts. Not only the impact on the environment of whatever might spill out of a pipe, but if it's, for example, a water supply pipe, how do we get the water supply recovered, I mean, get the service back up and running as quickly as possible, just to be prepared for those kinds of things.
Great. Thank you.
Anyone else? I sent my list to Katie earlier. Was I sent it last night? Yeah, early, or 12:01. Whenever I sent it earlier today, yesterday. A number of things that don't need discussion, but one was about the annual tracking of development and where development happens, and in particular housing, you know, for residential development. And Katie said that they are just about to get the 2018 data. And I raise this: would it be possible? You know, we have some complex decisions to make about redistricting, where we aren't going to have census data in time to redistrict before the 2021 elections for legislature. However, if we sort of have a threshold decision, do we think generally that things are more or less the same? Has growth, residential growth, followed more or less the same pattern, and we would end up with more people but just spread the same way as we had after 2010? Or has there been more growth in one area versus another? And I pointed out over email that the city was really on the bubble, has been on the bubble for 20 years. First, kind of just not quite enough to have five legislators, but we rounded up to five, and then in 2010 we rounded down to four. It seems to me, if we have a general sense that the 2017-2018 data look like the city is really growing faster than the outlying towns, that might push us to do some, to try to maybe go for shorter legislative terms, because we'd really be more out of whack if we went for four-year terms. Mike's got his brow furrowed. Are you following me? We know we can't redistrict on anything but the actual census data. But ahead of getting that data, we have to make decisions about, are we going to change the charter and go to a referendum to institute, say, a one-year term or a two-year term for the next election? So if we see the 2017 and 18 data, and maybe we'll get 2019 in time, that says, let's pretend the city has just, you know, added thousands more heads in beds than the rest of the county by proportion. That might tell us that really we're looking at a situation where we might really need appropriately to go to five city legislators. That then might lead us to set in motion shorter legislative terms rather than go with 4 years. So I'm just going to highlight this. I know I'm not proposing that we follow these data to do the same, you know, to do redistricting. I'm just saying these data could be a pretty important signal to us about what's the likely direction.
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, clearly supporting the legislature in its work around census and redistricting is something our department is happy to do and will help with whatever kind of questions that you put to us. We'll see what data we have, and we can come up with the best data sets we have at the time the question's asked, and we're happy to support that work.
Okay, so this will be really interesting, aside from housing geeks, but just have real-world consequence.
I also have to point out there's a big difference, or there can be a big difference, between where housing units are and where people are. So if you're building smaller housing units, you have maybe only one person to a housing unit in one part of the community, but another you might have three or four. So it'll be a guide, but it's probably not going to be a really great guide.
Okay, I hear you. So you expect soon to get the 2018 data? Does that mean,
yes,
say October, November next year, we'd get the next year's data?
We might be able to do it a little earlier in 2020, just because this year we put it off for a number of reasons till later in the year.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. And Katie, if you could talk a minute about the next greenhouse gas emissions inventory. I asked you about how are we going to count methane? And are we going to use the two ways of calculating that we did in the last inventory? And you had an interesting answer.
Sure, yeah. I mean, the county is a member of ICLEI, which is an international organization that supports local governments. And they have their own tool around greenhouse gas emissions accounting. And we use that tool. We have ever since we first started greenhouse gas emissions accounting. And they come up with new methodologies and new bases for the model every few years. So it really depends what tweaks have been made to the model. We'll take a look at how they're dealing with methane in particular and kind of make an assessment of whether it's robust enough for how we did it last time that we'd be able to see some comparisons and, you know, adjust as necessary so that we have the information we really need to make good decisions with our emissions inventory.
Thank you. You really want to sort of measure yourself on the same scale every time, sort of see, okay, how are we actually doing? It's I understand, hard to really do that, but you want to use the best science, you know, at that moment. So, all right. Anybody else have comments or questions? Thank you so very much. Thanks to your whole department for this intensive look at the comp plan and all the work and the 600 action steps. And there probably could have been more, too. But we really appreciate this really intense look at where we're going as a county. And thank you both very much for all this work. Thanks.
Thank you for your time today. Thank you for your support.
Put the screen up. A couple of planning related things before Katie walks out. I just want to sorry Katie, I already lost Joan, but she's just housing related successes that have happened since the last time we were together. Last Thursday the Attorney General Letitia James was here to help announce a $900,000 grant for community housing trust homes that was awarded to Ithaca Neighborhood Housing through Enterprise Community Partners. But it's part of it. James was here because it's part of an Attorney General settlement after the crash. Our department had a great deal to do with the application for that grant. We will be part of, you know, Megan McDonald in particular had a lot of input into the grant, and the department will be part of monitoring the homes as the program gets rolled out. That funding will be supporting a full-time person working on the housing trust at INHS, and will be able to support 18 new homes in permanent affordability. So that was a big success that we've been waiting a long time to announce. Found out about it last, I think, June. And the upstate chapter of the American Planning Association just recently had a conference and gave an award to the planning department and the county for the Community Housing Development Fund for an implementation grant, implementation of an initiative that was related to planning efforts, and they were able to show how the housing strategies and needs assessments over time really led to the housing fund, and the success of actually implementing that program was recognized by the Planning Association. So our thanks to the Planning Department and Megan and David for their work on the housing fund. And I've got, as of 5:30 or something, had a draft press release, so we'll get something out about that award. And just last thing, and yeah, you can go now if you want. I just wanted to make sure people knew that before we meet next, early voting will begin in New York State. As of Saturday, October 26th, people can vote in two locations around the county, at the Ithaca Town Hall and at the Crash Fire and Rescue Building up on at the airport, next to the airport. Saturdays and Sundays, 7 to 3, is that right? Who's most aware of? I know it's Saturday and Sunday for two weekends, as well as some evenings. So it starts October 26th, so public should take advantage of that. And whatever district you vote in, you can go. They will print out the correct ballot for you. And so that's kind of the innovation of this whole initiative. That is what I have. Any questions from anybody? All right, thank you. If I can just turn to Shauna Black for the revised resolution here that Lisa Monroe is waiting for. It's in your red folders.
Yes, thank you. I would like to move Resolution ID 8920, Grant Acceptance and Budget Adjustment for the New York State Unmet Needs Program, Office for the Aging.
So you're moving the revised. Okay, seconded by Anna. You want to explain the change?
Yes. So Lisa is actually here. We did pass one of the resolutions in committee and then later found that there were some accounting errors. And so the revised version has the correct amounts listed. And they are using 75% of the grant. So that's why there's a difference between the $85,863 and the $64,397. And then it lists all of the appropriations.
Okay, so that's because it's April 1st.
Through March 31st of 2020.
That's the full 85,000, but this is just for the calendar year 2019. That's the 75%.
That's okay. Right.
All right. Thank you, Sean. Any questions? All right. All in favor of the resolution? Yes, as revised. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for being here. All right. County Administrator's Report. Jason Molina.
Two things to report on tonight. One is the shared services plan. Our original approach to the shared services plan is that we would have it adopted by the panel by October 31st. We are going to be a little behind that only because there is a proposed position in the tentative budget that would be that I would include in submitting to the state for reimbursement, and that is the engineer out of soil and water, because it's a position that would be benefiting multiple municipalities and would be funded by the county. I think it qualifies under the shared services plan, and I would want to submit it to be included in there. I've also reached out to the Village of Trumansburg mayor and town supervisor for Ulysses for their shared recreation initiative. I read about that in the Trumansburg Free Press and reached out to them and said, hey, do you want to include this? And they did, and I think it qualifies as well. So while we were on track to be submitted to the state by October 31st, the deadline really is until the end of the year, so we have plenty of time. What I'll do is really recraft the draft. Probably there are two steps remaining that have to happen. One is I have to present to the legislature the draft plan. You have the opportunity to comment on it and then draft the final plan to the panel, which is all the chief executives in the county to vote on. And what I'll do is wait until the budget process is near an end and then probably provide you all with a draft plan for comment and then send it to the panel after that comment is over and let them vote on it to be submitted to the state. It should be done before the end of November, but just wanted to give you an update on it. So I would expect probably by the beginning of November send you a draft plan. I'll give a brief presentation at one of the legislative meetings, either the first or second one in November. The second piece is during the budget, proposed budget, there was a recommendation to update the county's fund balance policy. Rick and I will be working on that over the course of the next probably 2 months or so. Along with that, in the proposed budget, was a recommendation of transferring unassigned fund balance from the general fund to the capital fund to aid in the capital program and funding projects in the capital program. We discussed it briefly, and we feel it's probably in terms of sequence of events, the legislature should adopt the adjust or the updated fund balance policy and then consider transferring funds from the general fund to capital fund that would reflect or support and continue to comply with the updated fund balance policy. So at Budget, Capital, and Personnel on Friday, I'll be just talking about that, those steps, and have a draft resolution just so they can see it. And then Rick and I will get together, update the policy, put it through the process, and I would expect sometime between now and the end of the year you see that, if not the beginning of next year. I don't think there's any need to anything to happen right away because those practical projects aren't going to, you know, funds aren't going to go out the door within the next few months. So taking a little bit extra time is fine for your consideration.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Jason? I would like to know, did we ever hear back about, did our submission for the last shared services plan get reimbursement?
It got approved. I've been playing phone tag with Sue Savage at the Department of State, and it's been going on for about 2-3 weeks now. I just haven't been able to link there. There is one final question. I don't know what it is, and I think it has to do with once that's answered, then they'll release the funds. So we got the majority of what we submitted was funded. I think I mentioned the biggest, I think, shortcoming, an unfortunate shortcoming, is Cortland County is going to miss out on about $250,000 worth of reimbursement because they did not submit a plan last year. And that's $250,000 check they won't get. I tried, as did Sue Savage from the Department of State, to get the higher-ups to agree to this, but because they didn't submit a plan, the state will not provide them with reimbursement. Even though it was included in ours, it was not included in theirs. So there were some other I'd have to review again, but I've been playing phone tag with the state to try to answer the final question, and the funds should be released to us.
How much?
I don't have that off the top of my head. I'll have to get back to you. I'm sorry. There was a series of ones. For example, we'll be reimbursed for Swift 911, which I want to say was around less than $20,000. We'll get some reimbursement for folks that came into the healthcare consortium, and then we would have to redistribute some of that money to those jurisdictions. I want to say that was around $40,000 to $50,000. And there's something else I'm missing, but I don't remember off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
So nothing on the order of $250,000.
Not for us, no. We'll get a little bit of reimbursement for it, but that was the big loser there is Cortland County not getting that money.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. Leslie.
So was that just for information for us, or does that affect us in some way? Cortland not submitting.
It doesn't affect us.
Thank you.
It was just unfortunate. They did a lot of work with Laserfish.
Right.
And that's really the big bulk of it. And unfortunately, right, they just won't be.
Okay. Sure, yeah. Thank you.
No impact on us.
Thank you. All right. Mike.
I read that Ithaca City School District is going together on its health insurance issues with some other school districts, going to some kind of a self-insurance plan. Are school districts allowed in our consortium? Does it make any sense?
I don't think so.
They have their own. I'm pretty sure the reason they're not is because they have a mechanism to do something similar amongst themselves, which is what you're talking about. I forget the articles that the consortium's allowed to be created under, but I know school districts have the ability to do something similar. I don't think they can come in the consortium.
Okay.
I think they do something through BOCES.
No, this was four school districts. It was in the paper. But the thing that surprised me, they said they would be self-insured.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're not self-insured in our consortium. We buy the insurance, as I understand it. Or is it so-so?
I think it's considered self-insured.
Right.
I mean, the larger the scale, technically, probably the more viable it is to be self-insured because you have more participants.
I know when we started the consortium, that was something we looked at, and schools weren't eligible. We kind of had to work pretty hard to get to the number of covered lives, and if the schools had been able to join, it would have made it much easier, much quicker. So, anything else for Jason? All right, thanks, Jason. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
No report.
All right, thank you. Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
I, too, have 600 action points I want to go over.
Okay.
No, I really had no report for tonight, but Jason reminded me of an email we got last week. I wanted to report back because I think Mike or somebody asked at the last meeting about the AIM funding. When is that going to come out of our sales tax proceeds? And we did get that answer officially from the state at the very end of last week. And they will take money from out of our sales tax, the gross amount, in December of this year will be the first draw. And then again, a second portion in June of 2020. Those two portions added together make up the annual contribution for the first year of AIM funding coming out of our sales tax. The total amount that will be coming out of our sales tax, I don't have the exact figure right now, but it was in the realm of around $350,000 when you look at both pieces, the December withdrawal and the June 2020 withdrawal. In December, I want to say, is the biggest piece at about $275,000 to come out of this December sales tax check, and around $75,000, a much smaller piece, in June of 2020. That will not impact our forecast in any way for coming in at the end of the year way ahead of budget, because December typically is one of our largest months in sales tax proceeds, and it's also usually the fourth quarter is usually one of our biggest quarters. So it's going to come out at a time when we probably can best afford it, but I wanted to at least bring you up to date on what the net effect is on Tompkins County.
Mike?
As I understood it, this is supposed to come out of the new money from the internet sales tax. Are they going to give us the figure of how much new money there is to see how much of that is taken away?
Probably get about $275,000.
That's what I'm thinking.
I did receive a short note, not with any specific numbers per Tompkins County, but NYSAC has come up with figures for the first quarter that the state is in the process of breaking it down so we can see. We don't know those figures yet. I should probably have a better handle on either what Tompkins County's portion was for the quarter ending, I think it was June, or maybe it's the third quarter, when I go to the Treasurer's Group meeting a week from this Friday. There'll be people there from the state to report that to us. So tune in, and I should have more information for you at a forthcoming meeting.
I'm with bated breath.
Anything else for Rick? All right. Thank you very much, Rick. That's $350,000. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. Okay. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. I will go through the consent agenda. Please let me know if you have anything to pull off. Resolution A, resolution in support of establishing a temporary commission for the evaluation of New York State Office of Mental Health housing programs pursuant to S5637A, Carlucci, and Assembly 7489A, Gunther, ID 8921. We've done resolution B. Resolution C, resolution to delay the implementation of new lead poisoning regulations due to an unworkable timeline and exorbitant cost, ID 8923. And resolution D, resolution in opposition to state legislative proposals that undermine the careful balance that exists in state law related to the tax foreclosure process in New York State, ID 8918. And one appointment of Karen Osborne to the Public Information Advisory Board. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Shauna, seconded by Deborah. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. All right, let's for reports. Let's go to housing and economic. Yeah, Mike.
At some point, wherever you tell me, I'd like to have a couple of minutes to talk about this afternoon's meeting of the ITCTC, the Ithaca Tompkins Transportation Council. A couple of interesting things that came up on that.
Okay, sure. I'll put it down after the other committee reports. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
A few things to report out. Martha, thank you for the announcement about the $900,000 for INHS.
A few other updates. I just wanted to let people know that the city has the mayor put into his proposed budget $100,000 from the city for the Community Housing Development Fund. That's wonderful. I don't know where that will end up at the end of their debates. I think their voting starts next week.
That's so $100,000 in addition to their?
$100,000 in addition. So that is an added $100,000 to their current for the remainder of the current MOU. I did want to let everybody know I announced last time we all met about the unfortunate proposed downzoning of West MLK. They did, in fact, downzone West MLK from 6 stories to 5 stories. That could potentially reduce housing on the main street of the city. A couple, you know, I've heard varied from anywhere from 50 to a couple hundred units, depending on if it encourages down the development of as low as 3 stories in response. There is some concern that what will be built will be higher cost because there'll be smaller units. There's whole discussions on that front. The next up at the city, and I bring this up, the city things, because our housing study with Danter showed that we need in the county 500 units per year for 10 years to meet existing demand in the whole county, and that we have 15,000 in commuters. 25% of them would like to live in the county if they could, but either can't find a place or can't afford to. So the next thing that they will be looking at is something that has been used as a technique to increase housing, incremental development housing in cities throughout the country, which is accessory dwelling units. One of the measures that they are considering is to require that they only be allowed in properties that are homeowner occupied, which would limit it to about 10% of the properties in the areas they're considering. So hopefully they will think long and hard about that one and make this as broad as possible to address some of our housing needs. In HED, we have instituted an alternating process. We have had every single month tourism presenting, but we haven't had necessarily the ability to have TCAD present in depth. So we are switching it up, and we will have every other month an extensive presentation from TCAD and then an extensive presentation on tourism and CDB. And chamber. So in October, TCAD will be coming to present their work plan. Also, incremental development will be coming. As you all know, we've contracted with them this month or this year. And for everybody, you are invited. It is open that on Tuesday from 1 to 5 p.m. At the Trumansburg Village Hall, they will be coming for their third of 4 visits to Tompkins County to work with two municipalities that have now officially been selected, and that's Village of Trumansburg and the Town of Dryden. And they will be teaching them how to do stress tests, deep dive evaluations of their zoning code. And on Wednesday, they will be doing a train the trainer, which we are also invited to. And I can find the time out for that. That will hopefully help the planners in the future help others on doing deep dive evaluations of their zoning code. November, the chamber will be doing a deep dive presentation of a housing study that they have been working on, evaluating barriers and opportunities for workforce housing. And we will be bringing forward a resolution to create the task force on the to evaluate landlord liaison and other solutions to ensure the retention of existing housing stock. So stay tuned for that. That will be coming up. And the last thing I wanted to note for anybody who might be interested, ST8 is sponsoring that Southern Tier 8. This is the organization that we have been paying membership for the last year and a half. They will be doing an entire workshop on energy solutions for economic success October 24th at Tioga Downs. The morning I will be missing, as will HED, because that is the next HED meeting at 9:30 in the morning. So that was a mouthful, but a lot going on, and stay tuned.
Thank you, Anna. Any questions? Did you say InkDev was October 22nd and 23rd?
22nd at T-Bird from 1 to 5 p.m., and that is at the Village, Trumansburg Village Hall. And that you should, if you're interested, you should reach out to David West and let him know that you're interested in attending. And that is to train on how to do a stress test, which is a deep dive evaluation of the zoning code to make sure that it actually does what the comp plan of the municipality is saying they want to do.
And then what's on the 23rd? Where's that?
The 23rd, I will find out that I may actually know. That is for county staff and a few other staff who've been involved. So that will probably, I suspect, that will be downstairs, but I will find when and where.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much. All right. Next committee, Complete Census Count Committee. Mike Lanchair.
Yes, we did meet on October 7th. We heard a report from our subcommittee chaired by Dave McKenna. They've been examining some of the remote mobile locations that we're going to be trying to set up next year to help people be able to access the internet and to be able to file online. They've started to develop quite a comprehensive list, and not the exact locations on all of them, but they will be moving forward on those as we go along. We also heard from the Public Information Advisory Board, thanks to Marsha Lynch and Patty Poist, some of the efforts they're having to do advertising. One example that they told us about is now the TCAT buses have some of the census design signs on them trying to solicit people to apply for the census taker jobs. And so that's kind of important. We'll be getting busier and busier as we get closer to the census.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? Henry.
How are they doing on filling the census jobs, Mike?
I'm sorry?
How are they doing on filling the census jobs?
They've been getting applications. I don't think we heard any numbers from Kate Dillon from the Census Bureau who comes to our meetings. I mean, they were looking to get 600 to 800 applications. Not that they would hire that many people, but I can't tell you the exact response they have.
Do they have to be from each county, or is it like they'll hire people and put them wherever?
That question actually came up at the meeting. They try to locate the ones from the county in the county they come from, particularly, and they also let them ask for particular areas like their neighborhood that they might be able to do. Kate didn't exclude the possibility of people from other counties, but kind of said that's not their first priority.
All right. Thank you very much. Anything else for Mike? All right, thanks. Downtown Facilities Committee, Glenn Morey, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. We have not met since the last legislature's meeting, and our meeting on the 17th has been canceled due to closing issues.
Okay. Thank you, Glenn. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you. The Public Safety Committee meeting will be meeting here on Thursday, October 17th at 3:30. And one of the items we'll be hearing is from County Administration. We'll be presenting on the public safety building conditions assessment, and we've been talking about updating the scope to look at a broader range of possible things to examine in connection with the building. So that'll probably be the major feature of our meeting. Put you on the spot, Jason.
Yeah, we'll be able to talk about the scope in more depth. I don't know that we have anything on the condition assessment yet, but I'll check in with the realm. We do have the scope identified, and LaBella's working on the expanded scope already, but I'll see where we are with the condition assessment.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. We met Friday, October 4th, and Jude from the Child Development Council came and presented on year one of her being in the role of the child care planner position. We talked about fingerprinting for child care, how there is not that option here in the county, and Jason was going to look into some options and possibly come back to us. She also talked about how over the past year they added 89 spaces. However, they also lost almost as many, so there was a very small net gain. And that right now 75 spaces are currently pending development. So it was a nice report, and Deborah also came to that meeting. Also, the Human Rights Commission has been meeting, and we will have suggestions for the charter November 7th, 2019. We will have a special meeting with HHS at 5:15 before our next legislature meeting, and we'll vote on those changes. A few people from the Human Rights Commission met with Jonathan and Jason to discuss, and there were some very small wording issues, nothing substantive. And so we will be presented with that on November 7th, or perhaps have a copy of that a little bit earlier. Tonight we passed three resolutions. One was obviously the Office of Aging that we've already talked about, and the other two came from our NYSEC conference. And the first one was the new lead poisoning for kids. The standards have decreased from 15 micrograms per deciliter to 5. Right now our county currently takes action on 10 micrograms per deciliter, and so we don't have that much of a change. And they suspect that there will be probably very few cases that's going to be added, whereas in other areas and municipalities, they have stuck with the 15, the margin of 15. And so going down is going to require, I believe in New York City, they were going to have to hire around 17 people. So the resolution was formed in our committee. And it asked for an extension and when we would actually start implementing this. Obviously, that didn't change. It started October 1st. And it is also considered an unfunded mandate. And so despite the fact that in some counties they're going to have to hire 17 people, they're going to have to figure out how to make that expense. And then the other resolution dealt with the Office of Mental Health housing programs. Due to the inflation, there's been in housing, there's been no increase for this subsidy that's been provided. So that was to appeal to the state to provide more of an increase, and also to make a committee to study and to provide guidance. The next thing is that we will not have a meeting November 1st. We are going to move that to November 14th at 1 p.m. I would ask that all legislators please try and attend this. Jason, as well as administration, will be presenting on the results and findings of the Mental Health and Public Health Task Force. I'm part of the task force, and we have been meeting every other week since, I want to say, April, and looking at many different reference points for a recommendation on whether to integrate mental health and public health or whether to keep them separate. So that will be part of the presentation November 14th at 1 p.m. here in the chambers. The Board of Health, as well as the Community Services Mental Health Board members, will also be here to answer any questions. I would also, let's see here. I think that's it. If there are any questions about the task force, feel free to reach out. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Anything right now? Anna.
So if I recall, this is that the November 1st is not happening. It'll be on the 14th. And is that correct? And then
that's
there
right.
Will also be one in December in the first Friday.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep.
And the November 14th is for the committee to hear the recommendations, and then there would be a recommendation to the full body. So I presume there would be some version of a presentation to the full body.
Yes.
Here. So, okay. You know, assuming it comes out of whatever comes out of the committee. Okay.
The resolution establishing it actually doesn't
doesn't identify that HHS has to make a recommendation, identifies a recommendation made to the legislature. Whether HHS addresses that or not, but it just doesn't address that in the resolution that triggers the review of everything.
Okay.
So we would do a presentation to HHS as well as a presentation at the following legislature meeting.
Is there going to be a resolution drafted for the committee?
There will be a resolution drafted for the legislature to consider as well.
Okay.
So assuming HHS takes it up and wants to, it can. I'm just clarifying that in the establishing resolution, it does not say that it has to come as a recommendation from HHS. The recommendation is to go to the legislature.
Okay.
Yeah.
Annie?
So is the presentation that's going to happen later at the legislative meeting the same as what's going to
be
happening?
Yes, it will be.
Okay. So.
All right. Thank you. All right. Anything else for Shauna? Thank you very much. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair, you got all our business tonight.
Yeah, it looks like I did. Mike Pitty did more work than the rest of the legislature.
It's about time.
Touché. Anyway, Jeff and I have not met. We will be meeting this Thursday at 1 o'clock just ahead of public safety in these chambers. Beyond that, I have five bond resolutions to bring forward. First one is Resolution E, ID 8853, a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1.6 million in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of road and highway system reconstruction and improvements at various locations throughout the county, and I would move that.
Seconded by Glenn. Discussion. This is a long-form roll call, as the others are as well.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous. See, we can talk about $5,000 for 45 minutes and no discussion of $1.6 million. So, go ahead, David.
Okay. Resolution F, ID 8854. A bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $200,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of repairing and or replacing certain existing bridges located within the county. And I would move that.
Second by Ann Corman. Discussion? Mike Sigler.
Since Martha brought it up, I mean, why are we bonding all this money? Why don't we just pay cash?
Jason?
Well, we have the cash.
Because money's cheap right now.
Jason?
And that's fine. Yep. That's this question came up in Budget, Capital, and Personnel. I think you brought it up, Mike. One of the things to look at as we move forward, since you've been bonding now for just short of 10 years for roads and bridges, the question is what is your existing debt that you pay on that? And is it equivalent to what you would be investing annually? And that's a question I don't have an answer to right now. Generally speaking, you do this for two reasons. Well, primarily because you don't have the cash available to you to invest in the immediate moment, and therefore you spread that cost over future years. You have ramped up quite a bit over the past several years to be able to fund these improvements. So it's a good question to ask as we go into next year. Does it equal or is it equal or greater to the amount of debt we pay? And do we want to take on new debt for these projects, or do we want to pay cash for capital? It's something Rick and I have talked a lot about over recent 12 months about what do we pay cash for capital and what don't we. I don't think we're in a position right now to answer your question directly, but I would say because you're doing a $1.8 million investment every year in roads and bridges, this is a question we can probably address a little bit more for next year.
Rich?
I always see these numbers and I think the same thing, but one point I'd like just to put on the table is that we always want the people who benefit to pay. And if you pay all at once, it's this year's group of taxpayers that pay it. And a lot of these bonded costs are going to last for 15, 20, 25 years. And as long as you bond them, you spread those costs over the time that the actual people who are using that improvement are paying for it. So while it's nice to not have the debt, there is some secondary purpose to debt.
Mike Lane?
Rich just said better than I would have exactly that. And it's just one factor to think about when you're weighing debt versus cash.
Rick?
And that when you look at the capital program, which is later on in our agenda tonight when we look at the adopting the tentative budget and the five-year capital plan, the projections that Jason has done for our capital planning purposes, including the debt, goes out 20 years or maybe longer in certain cases. And if you look at each and every project, we made certain assumptions, which ones we were going to bond, which ones we were going to ban, and which ones we thought we were going to pay cash for. So you almost have to look at the whole gamut of all 30 projects that we're anticipating in order to answer your question on should this particular one be, you know, paid cash versus another one that we might pay cash for. For instance, in E and F, the first two bond resolutions you're looking at, those are our annual road and bridge appropriations that we do every year, totaling $1.8 million. Those will be immediately bonded in February of next year, and that's long term. The following three, which are G, H, and I, those are bans, which are just 1 year appropriations, because we're going to get a lot of that money back from the state and the Fed to pay off those amounts. So in each case, there's a little bit different philosophy or formula behind it that says bond, ban, cash, reserves, a variety. But if we look to the capital program, which the ink isn't even dry yet, but that kind of gives you a long-term view of each and every project.
Okay, ready to vote? Okay, roll call.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous.
Okay, now we have Resolution G, ID 8855. It's a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1.76 million in serial bonds and notes of Tompkins County, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of reconstruction of the Aetna Lane Bridge, County Route 109, bridge located within the county. And I would move that.
Seconded by Mike Lane. Discussion? Okay, roll call.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous.
Resolution H, 8856. A bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $995,000 in serial bonds and notes of the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of reconstruction of Central Chapel Road Bridge located within the county. And I would move that.
Seconded by Dan Klein. Discussion? All right, roll call.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous.
And finally, Resolution I, 8857. It's a bond resolution authorizing the issuance of up to $1.62 million serial bonds and notes to the County of Tompkins, New York, to pay a portion of the cost of reconstruction of the Cortland Street Bridge located within the county. And I would move that.
Second by Glenn Morey. Discussion? Roll call vote.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Question.
What?
There was a...
I just wanted to say something. But I can wait.
Started voting.
Okay, I can wait.
Okay. Go ahead.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous. Deborah?
I just wanted to say that I'm glad F&I doesn't work this hard all the time or we'd be broke.
Okay. Anything else?
We work.
Anything else, Dave?
No, that concludes my report. Thank you.
All right. Phew, thank goodness. All right. Thank you very much. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, we met on October 3rd. We also met just before this meeting for a few minutes. We talked about an issue that had come out of the Housing Committee about the possibility of enacting an assessment reduction for capital improvements to residential properties. So there's a resolution on that a little bit later. We also talked a little bit about out-of-assessment state mandates for information on tax bills. As you know, on our tax bill that you get, we have a small pie chart in which we explain the amount of real property taxes that is attributable to state unfunded state mandates, particularly Medicaid. And we've had that on there for quite a few years. And the assessment department just asked us to review that, to ask if we wanted to continue that. And it was the consensus of the committee that that continues in the future. We passed a resolution that we were concerned about, and that'll be a little bit later here, about the possibility of changing the way tax payments are applied to the various years when a property is behind in taxes, which would reverse that and could potentially lead to folks never getting out of the tax situation to the county, and would keep us behind, even though we would have to upfront the money for the school districts and for the villages. At the request of our chair, we began talking again about the issue of legislator training and the allocation of funds for conferences, for example, NYSAC and other things. Thanks to Rich John, who agreed to do a subcommittee with Dan Klein and Amanda Champion. I hear good reports that they will have a proposal coming to us at our next meeting to talk about discard or pass, I suppose. And the only other thing, and Rick, you reported before about the new person that's coming to work for you later in October. You want to mention her again?
Yes, Joanne Carruthers comes to us next Monday, the 21st, coming from Cortland County, and we look forward to her being installed as our Director of Accounting Services. please reach out to her and say hi when she's on board.
Thank you. Yes, we've got one resolution, and I have, I'll take questions first. I'd like to ask Amanda to move Resolution J because I didn't support it in committee.
All right, so I will go ahead and move Resolution J, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number E of 2019, a local law enacting the New York State Real Property Tax Law, Section 421-F, Capital Improvements to Residential Properties Exemption, ID 8767.
And seconded by Leslie McBean Claiborne. And this came out of both committees.
Right. HED talked about this. This is simply authorizing a public hearing. Jay is here. I'm sure he could answer more questions about the proposal. I'm sure Anna could talk to it as well if people have questions.
Any questions? Mike Lane.
Just wanted to say the reason I voted against it in committee was because the experience with the city and the town of Dryden has shown very few people have taken advantage of this. The requirements are for new construction has to be attached to the dwelling. There was discussion about, well, maybe we need to publicize it more. I think it's going to require more work from our assessment department. It's going to spread this cost out over the other property owners in the county, and I just wasn't convinced to vote for it.
Anna Kellis?
Yeah, I super respect everybody's opinion. I did want to share one piece of information that I thought to be very helpful on this just for all of us moving forward is that alone the city abatement actual dollar amount in some evaluation of it is rather small, but the combined municipality plus the county may actually be the impetus that would be needed. So that may be some of the reason why it hasn't been used significantly in the past, on top of the lack of communication. And the city did, when we asked them, did communicate with us that they haven't done any communication on this outside of voting for it, which I think will have a significant impact. So just wanted to share those two pieces of information.
Anything else? I was wondering about the school district, since the school taxes are by far the highest. Is anybody approaching any of the school districts?
I'll let you know when I hear back.
Okay. All right. All right, but this is just to set the hearing for November 7th. All in favor, please raise your hands. Opposed. That passes 12 to 2. All right, there will be a public hearing. Anything else, Mike?
No.
Any questions for Mike from GO Committee? All right, thank you very much. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson.
Well, it's too late to report on the last meeting because I did that at our October 1st meeting, and it's too early to report on our next meeting because I don't know what's going to be on the agenda. We had planned to have some people come and talk about a watershed protection district MOU, but unfortunately they can't make it. So anything can happen at the next meeting. Stay tuned.
All right. That's suspenseful and exciting. Thank you, Deborah. Rich John.
The ribbon cutting, I believe, was held for the Treeman Marina new trail, and I was wondering if anybody here was able to attend that. It seems like the appropriate time to bring it up.
Yeah, that was great. And then we went back on Sunday because I had to show my husband and dog, you know. It's a really beautiful extension of the trail system. Thank you, Jay. So, yeah, and Henry and Mary Beth were there. Did you want to add anything?
No, it was a lovely day.
Yeah, that's good. So, yeah, it's just one of – there are really lots and lots of – places people can get out and walk around. This is now one of the prettier ones in the county.
Yeah, I would say that it's a significant investment. It's New York State money here, which is great to see, and it significantly improves Treeman Marina as a resource, not just for boat owners or dog owners, but just for everybody. And it is beautiful.
Henry, yeah.
Yeah, I have a question maybe for Deb. about the, I want to make an announcement, the State Department of Environmental Conservation and DOT and ACERTA were all conducting a public outreach to inform New York's participation in a multi-state initiative to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And the event is going to be held on November 7th, which is our next.
Yeah, it's unfortunately scheduled during one of our meetings.
It's going to be during our next Legislative Council mission, which will be November 7th in Ithaca. But it will be held at the space, I believe, at Green Star. And people can register by email. But I just wanted to announce it so that, you know, since it's a conflict with us, that people can go.
It's some kind of like cap and trade arrangement involving several northeastern states.
Well, that's REGGIE, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. I saw the notice. I looked at the day. Said, "Oh, I'll forget about it." So, what again is? What are they doing that's new?
They're having a public meeting about it, about the climate change and transportation.
Yeah. I think it's just to make it just public, because unless you're in government, you probably never heard of REGGIE.
Well, we've been part of REGGIE from the beginning. New York State was a co-founder with like Connecticut, Maine, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, the northeastern states, New Jersey too, I think.
Yeah, it's November 7th at 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., which conflicts. It's a space, a Green Star Group co-op, and it conflicts with our next legislative meeting, which is not on Tuesday because it's Election Day. It's on Thursday.
Right. And REGGIE is basically a regional cap-and-trade system that the power producers pay into, and based on the carbon emissions they produce, and that is the money that funds NYSERDA, sort of the big picture there.
Yeah, they're having four meetings, one in Long Island, one in New York City, one in Buffalo, and then the last one in Ithaca.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks very much, Henry. That's important. We can tell people to ignore us that night and go see them. Go to that meeting.
Okay, thank everyone, you. Wear your pajamas.
Deborah really wants to wear pajamas to a meeting. Anything else for Peak? All right. Thanks very much, Deborah. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We will be meeting on October 18th at 9 o'clock at the Old Jail Conference Room. Among other things, we're going to approve 11 sets of minutes, mostly from the EBC meetings we've had. And then Jason has told us, of course, we're going to be talking about the fund balance policy. So that will be quite an important meeting that's coming up. I think I have one resolution.
Yeah, before you go there, I meant to ask you about the state mandates on the tax bill. It seems like they're really piling up again. You know, a few FTEs here, a few more FTEs there. Is it the assessment department that's going to just pick the Medicaid number out, or how is that going to be determined?
I can't answer how that's calculated. It must come from.
There's a formula that talks about local. I think it has to do with your local. Your local costs in relation to your total budget size, but I can ask Jay to elaborate how it's determined. I think it originally started with a 9 and 9. I think there were 9 primary mandates that had 90% of the costs in county budgets. I don't know how it's calculated now, but I think it has to do with your local cost share in comparison to your total budget. But I can ask Jay how he does it.
I mean, I know probably NYSAC is going to track it. I mean, Medicaid is by far the biggest, but when you add a few people in district attorney's office, a few more people in probation, wherever, you know, just starting to add up.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Good point.
All right. Your resolution, Mike.
Yes, ID 8925, adoption of amendments to the 2020 tentative Tompkins County budget and 2020 through 2024 capital program. So this is the this was adopted by the expanded budget committee at our last meeting, and now it needs to be enacted, hopefully, by the full legislature, so we can go to public hearing.
Seconded by Shauna Black. Rich.
Mike, are you moving the original amendment or as amended? original resolution or the proposed amendment? It was in the red folder.
I think the committee chair has to move the what was passed.
Yeah, and then I think you're going to.
I would then I would move to amend in accord with the version in the red folder, and it, the change involves a second resolved to change it to read. Resolved further that because the value of a median-priced home increased from $185,000 in 2019 to $190,000 in 2020, the tentative budget as amended results in an increased tax payment of $12.69 on a median-priced home.
That would be a friendly amendment for me.
All right. So that's brought into the resolution. Discussion? So this is to adopt all the amendments that we, as the Expanded Budget Committee, made. But now, as the legislature, we need to adopt those or make others and then move it to a public hearing. Is there anything, Dan?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment on the part that Rich added, which is already in there about the talking about the median price house. That's fine. I'm not going to object to the wording or the concept. But I thought about this one a lot over the years. And I spent a lot of time trying to explain to people how in a year like this, when our tax rate is going down, if your assessment doesn't change, then your taxes actually go down. And over the years, I've just decided this thing that we do about the median price house is probably more confusing than clarifying. So, again, I'm not going to reject or try to change it, but I just want to say clearly to anyone that's listening is that if your assessment did not go up, your taxes will actually go down a little bit this year. Your county taxes will go down.
We'll strike it.
What did you say? Was that a statement, Mike, or just a sneeze?
If he wanted to move to strike it, I think he would find some place.
Or you could add, if your tax... What you just said, if your assessment did not go up.
I'm not going to do that at this time. It's just a lot of wording that I'm not sure clarifies it at this time, but I just did want to say that.
Fortune favors the bold.
There is some accuracy and some importance in that number. The 185,000, 190,000, like that matters too, but it requires a lot of context to understand, so that's why I'm not going to try to mess with the wording.
I would just say that that's one reason quite a number of years ago we stopped talking about the tax rate and changed to talking about the tax levy, because that's the actual increase of money that you take out of your tax base. It seemed like the county was the only one doing it for a long time, and all the city and the other municipalities were all talking about their rates going down, even though they were taking more levy at that time. So I can't disagree that it's confusing. But I like the fact that we talk about the levy.
And I think it's useful to talk about both, and that because people, well, that's great, but, you know, how many million, 50 million, 51 million, what does that mean to me? So I think it's there. The information is there for reporters to mess up if they're going to. Sorry, but there aren't any in the room, as usual. Sorry. But Marcia will put it in clearly, and they'll do what they're going to do with it. And I think it's useful to have all that information. Are there any other amendments or discussions or any other discussion on the whole capital plan and the whole budget? Are we ready to vote? All in favor of adopting the amendments to the budget and capital plan and moving to a public hearing, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Fantastic. All right. Thank you very much. Anything else, Mike?
No.
All right. Just a huge thank you to the staff, to Jason for leading the department heads and spending your summer on this and fall, to Kevin McGuire for really bird-dogging all the details and making sure that things were correct and we had all the information that we needed, and to everybody who was involved. Really appreciate the work and appreciate the process. I think it really works to be a logical expression of our values and our goals. So Thank you. All right. We've got Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
Thank you for leaving the best committee for last. Couldn't help myself. Don't have anything else to report except that we will meet on December 9th. We did not have enough agenda items to warrant a meeting this month. I know Kit is working on a report for us on flexible work schedules. Several years ago, WDIC worked with county administration in trying to figure out how we pilot something like this. So we'll be looking to hear from her and some other issues on December 9th. That's my report.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions? Thank you very much. Mike Lane, you want to talk about ITCTC?
Yes, this afternoon, the ITCTC meeting, that's the Ithaca-Tompkins County Transportation Council, the policy committee met. And toward the end of the meeting, we have member reports, and New York State DOT is a member, and Mark Frechette from that organization came and spoke about a couple things I thought you might like to hear about. One is the DOT facility construction. He told us that that was relet after the initial bids came in too high, that they have a proposed contractor. The contract is at the comptroller's office, has not been let, but they're expecting it to be announced any day, and that it will, and that work will commence almost immediately on that once the, because of the process they're using, and you know, getting the site ready, for example. He said that this is a $24 million project. Thought you'd like to know about that. The other thing he spoke about, a couple of things, was the Route 34 bridge in Lansing that has, as we know, been flagged for deficiencies. And they are trying to do some repairs on that. There's a number of flagged issues on that bridge, he said. They've gone to a one-lane process so that they didn't have to have it the weight reduced quite so much if they only have a certain number of vehicles going at a time one direction. It's lighter than if you got vehicles both directions, I understand. That project, and well, Mark said it was probably one of the worst bridges in the region, or maybe even in the state, and they're trying to get it done. They're expecting it to, expecting it to be back to two lanes by the fall of, and then the new bridge project is supposed to start in the fall of 2020. It'll be about a two-year project to rebuild that bridge. In the meanwhile, they are concerned about the bridges that will need for detours, including the Ludlowville Bridge, which is our county bridge, and we are going to have to make sure that that keeps moving ahead. I believe, Dave, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think that one, according to the Capitol report, is in the design phase at this point. And the last thing I'll mention, speaking of bridge flags, was the Freeze Road Bridge in Varna was flagged. Mark said that when the inspectors got there, they couldn't find the foundation for one of the center struts for the bridge. And he described that as similar to what happened to the Schoharie Creek Bridge a lot of years ago, where it scoured out the foundation underneath it. The bridge is so old that there aren't diagrams of how they ever constructed it, that part of it. We were either going to have to close the bridge or we're going to have to repair it. And I know Jeff Jeff Smith sent out an email to us about their plans to get right on that to see if they can make repairs, and we hope that the town of Dryden can proceed as fast as possible to try to get this new bridge approved and built. So those three things I wanted to talk about.
Jonathan.
Just one little from what I know. My understanding is that we intend to start the Ludlowville Bridge in early spring, get it done before they start on the Route 34B bridge. Otherwise, we're in big trouble.
Right. Everett will have to go down through Myers.
And on the Freeze Road Bridge, they're going to, I think it's next week that they're 2 days, I think he said, are going to be working on it where it will be closed for partial, most like the work day, but not at night. So it won't be like totally closed, just closed while they're working on it. All right. Thank you very much for that report, Mike. Any questions about ITC in this report? Great. Very good to have that update. Thank you very much. Can I get a motion on the October 1st meeting of the Thompson County in the minutes of the legislature meeting? Moved by Amanda, seconded by Anna. Any comments, discussion? All in what? What did I say?
Briefless.
Anna, Annie,
briefless.
One of the A's over there, two of the A's over there. Moved by Amanda, seconded by Ann Corman. All in favor of the minutes, please raise your hands. Any opposed? All right. That's it, right, gang? All in, can I get a motion to adjourn? Moved by Anna, seconded by Henry. All in favor?
Well,
opposed. Thank you. We're adjourned.